welcome to the History and Philosophy of Physics podcast. I'm Tegan Phillips. This is episode 10. It's elementary, which, in addition to being a famous phrase from Doyle's character Sherlock Holmes, is an accurate two-word summary of Empedocles' response to Parmenides. I wasn't initially planning on covering Empedocles, because his theory is more inclined towards what we would now consider chemistry rather than physics, but I did some more research and thought his work would still be worth talking about in this podcast, at the very least because it introduces more properly the concept of forces and their interaction with matter, which for Empedocles was fundamentally the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air, or ether. Also, because of his theory of sensation, which included an explanation of how we physically see and hear things. Empedocles was a philosopher and poet born in the early 5th century BCE, maybe around the year 490 BCE, so he was probably a contemporary of Leucippus and a couple decades older than Democritus. Empedocles was from Acragas, a Greek colony on the southern coast of Sicily, and may have been part of an aristocratic family. He is said to have traveled to various places, but that's said of pretty much all ancient Greeks written about from this time period, and, like most others, there's no real evidence that he did or did not. Supposedly, he visited other colonies in Italy as well as mainland Greece itself, traveling to Olympia, site of the ancient Olympic Games, and elsewhere in the Peloponnese region, which is the chunk of land in Greece just southwest of Athens. There's some report that Empedocles' grandfather was a victor at the Olympic Games, so perhaps his family did have reason to travel there. Who knows? Empedocles is often regarded as one of the most influential philosophers from before the time of Socrates. He built on the work of earlier philosophers, including my favorite deified ancient Greek vegetarian, Pythagoras, and created a work of four elements which is quite significant and is sometimes regarded as one of the earliest theories of particle physics, alongside the 5th century atomism I spoke about last episode. Empedocles also had some interesting beliefs about his own divinity. If you thought Pythagoras had no competition for the title of favorite deified ancient Greek vegetarian, think again. But first, I want to talk about Empedocles' more philosophical and physics-y theories. Like Leucippus and Democritus, Empedocles was not really satisfied with the Parmenidean idea of an unchanging, unmoving, homogeneous world. We don't have complete copies of any of Empedocles' writings, only fragments, shocker, but there is a relatively considerable amount of fragments. Our dear friend, the 3rd century CE biographer Diogenes Laertius, tells us that Empedocles wrote two poems which were called On Nature and Purifications. Recently, some scholars have suggested there was only one poem, which essentially had two parts covering fairly distinct topics. The reason why it might matter whether there were two poems or one is because what's traditionally called On Nature has a physical focus. It presents Empedocles' theory of the creation and structure of the physical world, while Purifications is a religious text about the state of man and morality. So if these were written together into one poem, that would suggest closer links, or perhaps some thematic ties between the two. I'll mainly be talking about what is known from the fragments of the part On Nature anyway, so it doesn't really matter for this podcast. The last few episodes, I've probably mentioned Parmenides and his all is being, nothing moves thing a lot. I've already mentioned him once today, and I'll do it again because Empedocles' work On Nature was very much influenced by Parmenides' work. He was a really influential guy. In episode 7, the episode on Parmenides, I shared a quote from William Casey Guthrie's History of Greek Philosophy, and I want to reiterate it here. Pre-Socratic philosophy is divided into two halves by the name of Parmenides. His exceptional powers of reasoning brought speculation about the origin and constitution of the universe to a halt and caused it to make a fresh start on different lines. One of those lines was atomism, but a different one was started by Empedocles. Empedocles addressed much of On Nature to someone named Pausanias, a pupil of his, He says if Pausanias, or the reader, is attentive and receptive to the message of the poem, they will achieve an intelligence beyond all other mortals. As quoted by Sextus Empiricus, "So hard is it for these things to be seen or heard by men or comprehended by the mind. And you, who have come here into retirement, shall learn no more than mortal mind has power to know." Empedocles wasn't included among these mortal minds, since he declared himself to be divine, exiled into a cycle of life and death, and just in the final stage of reincarnation before he will be able to return to the realm of the gods. Part of On Nature is addressed to the muse Calliope, seeking divine inspiration and authority. I guess because Empedocles himself wasn't enough. He was still in human form. The poem defends our ability to trust our senses and know things based on what we see, hear, touch, and so on. "Consider now, with all the means at your disposal, in whatever way each thing is clear, not putting more trust in sight than in hearing, nor in clamorous hearing than in the evidence of the tongue, nor should you withhold your trust from any of the other limbs in which there is a passageway for perception, but perceive each thing in the way in which it is clear." So, what did Empedocles think our senses tell us? Here, first of all, the four roots of all things: Zeus, the gleaming, Hera, who gives life, Idaneus, and Nestus, who moistens with her tears the mortal fountain. These four deities are identified with what we now call the four classical elements: fire, earth, air, and water. Empedocles said that these elements are eternal and found in equal proportions in the universe. They are called roots because it is from these four elements that all things in the world arise: people, birds, flowers, and so on. The elements are mixed, separated, and moved about by two opposing forces, which Empedocles called love and strife. Love brings the elements together, and strife pulls them apart. This fragment tells how Empedocles relates the interactions between elements and forces in the world in general. "Twofold is what I shall say, for at one time they, the elements, grew to be only one out of many. At another time, again, they separate to be many out of one, and double is the birth of mortal things, double their death. For the one is both born and destroyed by the coming together of all things, while the other, inversely, when they are separated, is nourished and flies apart. And these incessantly exchange their places continually, sometimes by love all coming together into one, sometimes, again, each one carried off by the hatred of strife. And inversely, the one separating again, they end up being many. To that extent, they become, and they do not have a steadfast lifetime. But insofar as they incessantly exchange their places continually, to that extent they always are immobile in a circle." There is a symmetry and balance in Empedocles' theory. There are times when one force, love or strife, is dominant, but then they shift and swap. They slowly alternate back and forth so that the elements come together and separate and come together again in a never-ending cycle. From this cycle arises a more visible cycle, that of birth and death, things coming to be and passing away. Like in the theories of Parmenides and the Atomists, nothing is properly created or destroyed. Things don't just pop into existence from nothing, and they can't be utterly demolished to the point of non-existence. From the elements, things come to be, and back into the elements they break up into when they die. In this way, the four elements fill the role of Parmenidean being, or atomism's atoms, and they share the property of being eternal. Like atoms, the elements come in different forms and can move around. Again, Sextus Empiricus wrote, "For these are all equal and identical in age, but each one presides over a different honor, each one has its own character, and by turns they dominate while the time revolves. And besides these, nothing at all is added, nor is lacking. For if they perished entirely, they would no longer be. And this whole here, what could increase it, and coming from where? and how could it be completely destroyed, since nothing is empty of these? But these are themselves, but running the ones through the others, they become now this, now that, and each time are continually similar. The elements can't be created or destroyed, and they combine in different ways to create all the material things in the universe. We can experience the elements using our senses, and can observe new things being made out of combinations of these elements. For example, in the firing of bricks, which can change soft and malleable clay, a kind of earth, into something stronger and more durable through the addition of fire. We can't observe the forces of love and strife. Well, not at an elemental level. We can certainly see and experience how the emotions of love and strife can bring people together and pull them apart. Among the elements, these forces can only be inferred through their effects and through reason, rather like the fundamental physical forces before force carrier particles, the photons, gluons, etc., were discovered. These forces are always present and almost always acting on every element, or all the matter in the world. The reason I say almost is because Empedocles did suggest that there were times in the universal cycle when either love or strife is completely dominant. When strife had reached the lowest depth of the vortex, and love was in the midst of the eddy, then all things came together in it to be one. Not all at once, but they came willingly from this side and that, and as they came together, strife began to move out to the furthest limit. The initial stage is when love wholly dominates and everything is together in a single perfect sphere. It's a force that pulls from all sides equally. Strife enters the sphere and begins to separate out the different elements as the cosmos begins to form. According to a later writer, Empedocles says that ether was separated first, fire second, and after that, earth. From the earth, as it was sharply constricted by the force of the rotation, water gushed forth, and from this in turn air ascended in the form of vapor. The heavens arose from the ether, the sun from the fire, terrestrial things being compressed from the other elements. Gradually, our planet comes to be, primarily a combination of earth and water, held together by love and separated from the heavens by strife. Then, life in the form of plants and animals is created. Early creatures were essentially created by the random mingling and separation of elements. Most perished because they were ill-suited to the environment or unable to reproduce. However, some creatures were formed in such a way that enabled them to survive, being organized spontaneously in a fitting way. It was survival of the fittest, but fitness was determined in part by the elemental constitution of the creatures. When strife is wholly dominant, the elements are completely separated and there is no life in the world, just the elements, possibly moving in a whirl or a vortex. Let's now return to the topic of sense perception. Empedocles provided an interesting account of the physical process of perception, trying to explain why we can trust our senses and consider them reliable indicators of the state of the material world. Empedocles is actually the first Greek we know of to have provided a detailed explanation of perception. Empedocles said we can sense things because effluences are given off from everything that comes into being. Effluences are little fragments, like tiny particles, which are continually emitted by all material things, from trees to sand to penguins. They are a characteristic blend of elements matching the elemental constitution of the thing they come from. These elemental particles are recognized within us, or the sensing being, by the elements inside us. For by means of earth, we see earth, by means of water, water, by means of ether, divine ether, by means of fire, destroying fire. According to some accounts of Empedocles' theory, the effluences given off by objects come in different sizes and enter our bodies through different openings in different sensory organs. After all, the pores of the skin differ from the pores of the eye. If we were to think of eyes as having pores which receive light. This is why one cannot judge of the objects of another, for the passages of some are too wide, and of others too narrow for the object perceived, so that some effluences go straight through without touching, whereas others are unable to enter at all. Once the effluences, or little bits of elemental matter, entered the body through the appropriate passageway, they would meet the corresponding elements within. It seems like Empedocles thought this occurs at least partly within the organs themselves, so that fire in the eye is what meets and allows us to perceive the fiery parts of objects, and so on. Empedocles also seems to have thought that the blood around the heart had roughly even proportions of elements, and so was ideally suited for cognition. Therefore, this is where our thinking and at least part of perception takes place. How something is sensed isn't really fixed, according to Empedocles, even though it occurs on this physical basis via the effluences in elements. Hippolytus, who lived in the 2nd and 3rd centuries CE, described it so. If you fix them deep in a mind that is not in a whirl, meditating on them sympathetically, and with an attention that is pure, all of these will remain with you throughout your life, and you will obtain, by means of them, many others. For according to each person's nature, these things grow and become a part of one's character. But if your thought is for other things, the countless wretchednesses which arise among people and blunt the edge of their careful thought, these will desert you quickly when the time comes round, for they long to return to their own kind. When the mind, or heart, is disturbed and turbulent, perceptions don't really register. The effluences can still enter the body, but they won't be taken up. They'll be literally in one ear, out the other. Since everyone has a slightly different ratio of elements within them, everyone will perceive things a little bit differently. So you may find the temperature of this spring morning to be ideal, while I might feel it's a little bit chilly. That could be because I have less fire inside me, so I don't sense as much of the fire from the sunlight. Theophrastus also noted that Empedocles related the ratio of elements in a person to their temperament and intelligence, saying, "Those in whom the elements are mingled in equal or almost equal proportions, and are neither too dispersed, nor too small, nor too large as to size, are the most intelligent and have the most exact perceptions. And those that come next in these respects are intelligent in proportion, but those who are in the opposite condition are the least intelligent." A similar concept is actually found in the theory of humors I mentioned last week. To finish, I just want to say a few words about Empedocles' other work, The Purifications. It's primarily a religious work about the fallen state of humanity, transmigration of the soul, a doctrine held by the Pythagoreans, the importance of vegetarianism, also held by Pythagoreans, gods and demons. As I mentioned near the start of this episode, it's kind of debated how closely related On Nature and Purifications were, and whether they were parts of a single work. For Empedocles, transmigration, the movement of the soul into a different body after death, was governed by the four elements and the forces of love and strife. So, even if they were separate poems, they were clearly still somewhat connected. In Purifications, Empedocles declares himself to be a divine being who was exiled to earth and has ascended through different forms by purifying his soul. Diogenes Laertius recorded that Empedocles started the poem saying, "I go about among you an immortal god, no longer mortal, honored by all as is my due, crowned with fillets and flowing garlands. When I enter the prosperous towns, with these men and women, I am revered. They follow me in countless numbers, asking, where is the path to gain? Some seeking prophecies, others long racked by grievous pains, begging to hear the word that heals all manner of sickness." Nothing like starting your book by stating, "I am no longer mortal and am revered everywhere I go, as I should be." While Empedocles was quite popular and influential, especially for his work on nature and his poetic skill, he is up there among the most influential pre-Socratic philosophers, he still didn't quite inspire the cult which Pythagoras did. So I guess it's better to be deified by others than to deify yourself. In ancient times, a number of writers reported that Empedocles died by leaping into the volcano Mount Etna, supposedly so that his body couldn't be found and it would be thought his entire being was taken up into the realm of the gods. Scholars see this as just a myth, but today it's not known how or where Empedocles died. The four or five classical elements are a fairly common concept found in varying forms in many different cultures, including ancient Egypt, Persia, Babylon, Japan, China, Tibet, India, and some First Nations cultures such as the Anishinaabe here in Canada. While modern physics and chemistry doesn't support elements as the fundamental base for matter, that role belongs to atomic particles, they still have a place in many cultures and in popular science. This summer, I'm working for Let's Talk Science, a national STEM outreach organization in Canada, and right now, we're actually putting together some STEM activity videos around the theme of the four elements, earth, water, fire, and air. So, that's a fun coincidence. In the next episode, we'll wrap up discussion of pre-Socratic natural philosophers with Anaxagoras. I hope you'll join me for that episode in a few weeks. Lastly, there are the usual reminders. You can check out the website for the podcast at historyandphilosophyofphysicspodcast.ca and follow the podcast on Facebook or Twitter. Just search at histphilphyspod. You can also send me an email at histphilphyspod@gmail.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe.